Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
I am very excited to introduce today's speakers, Mark and Deneb. Mark is a brand and UA designer, and Deneb goes by the title of Captain Accessible at Sea Monster Studios. And they are a pair that I have had the pleasure of hearing speak at other events like WordPress Accessibility Day. I think Deneb has also spoken for us at Meetup previously here. So we are so excited to have them back and very much welcome you to the stage.
You should be seeing our screen image now. Is it working?
Yep.
Very cool.
I can see fine, so.
Everybody okay.
Else, we got a thumbs up, at least one.
Nice. Okay, and as you can see, there's a QR code in the bottom left. If you guys want to take a picture of that, it will give you access to our PowerPoint, and you can follow along as you go, or feel free to just watch the screen. But awesome. Well, we're going to get started here, and I'm going to move to the next slide. Hello. Again, as you said, this is Mark Alves and Deneb. We're from Sea Monster Studios, and Deneb, why don't you take it from here, and I'll jump in.
Sure. So at Sea Monster Studios, when I started getting involved in accessibility, I spoke to my boss and I said, hey, what should my title be? You know, because it's kind of a new sort of role that I was getting into. And so he took a poll of the whole team and they decided that I should be Captain Accessible. So that's what I am. And just kind of the accessibility guy.
Awesome. And I am the brand and UI guy. And that's basically it.
So let's see. So I started in web development. I actually took a boot camp because I used to be an English teacher. So coming to it from kind of a different role, but I learned kind of the essentials of web development in my boot camp. But they taught us. You know, I think we had one discussion about accessibility. It lasted about 30 minutes, and that was it. And I'm guessing that's probably what most boot camps and many professionals, that's all they get as well. And so when one of my first days on the job, Wes, our boss, asked me, hey, could you review this site for accessibility? And I said, how do I do that? And he said, well, I don't know, figure it out. And so I did. And I just fell in love with doing that, to making sure that the websites work for everybody. So really became, as it says, an accessibility advocate. But really that third bullet point, a philo accessibilist, right? A lover of accessibility, really. So I got my WASP, CPAC, CPWA, I got the whole thing. You know, I'm even trusted tester, right? I've never used that, of course, but just because I wanted to fully embrace this role. And I do, I really love it. So that's me.
Awesome. Yeah. And as we talked about earlier, my name is Mark. I've got about 15 years of brand identity and brand system management under the belt. Mostly brand systems, color palette design, UI, everything visual when it comes to that. So Sea Monster Studios, we offer development, accessibility, optimization, and visual branding. So I will do a lot of this stuff on the visual branding side. And in previous life, I've worked with Starbucks, Microsoft, Russell Vestments, Bing, other companies similar to that. So today, what we want to do here, just give you a quick overview. We're going to talk about the unfortunate tug of war that can happen sometimes between the accessibility world and the design world. We're going to talk about the pain points that we experience on both sides, also some common pitfalls that we might fall into. We want to give you guys some strategies on how to persuade your boss, or maybe it's not your boss, maybe it's your brand manager. And then we got three takeaways basically to help you present your case with that. So basically, that's what to expect today. Now let's jump into it here. Okay, branding accessibility, match made in heaven, right? Well, sometimes it actually ends up being a little different. Denim, what do we see here?
Well, so this is a picture. I don't know if you guys remember those I'm a PC, I'm a Mac ads from, was it the 90s? Or the early 2000s, maybe?
Yeah.
Anyhow, so a man in a you know, very nice suit and a white shirt and a tie is on one side of the screen, and on the other side is just kind of a, he's slouching, he's wearing a kind of a long sleeve, but you know, shirt, just a kind of casual attire. Just two very, very different types of people.
Right. Two different types of people and two unique perspectives, right? So mm-hmm. Mac, PC, tech driven versus like art driven, you might want us to, you could say. I think just putting it in a different form here, you've got cat people, you've got dog people, right? Cats versus dogs. Okay, let's get political here. We've got Democrats, we've got Republicans. And honestly, the list goes on and on and on. We see this in human nature. We tend to have two different silos that we put ourselves into. And in this, sometimes it can be branding and accessibility in the two different silos.
Yeah, I like this slide because it shows a red circle with the word branding in it and a white circle with the word accessibility in it. And they're two kind of separate circles. And in between those two is now a word versus, right? Or initials anyhow.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not always as peaceful as we might want it to be. Right. And sometimes we'll get a little bit of fighting going on here or some type of adversarial relationship. And, you know, I think what it comes down to is it ends up being a tug of war of priorities, right? So on one side, you've got branding. We're concerned with things that have to do with aesthetics, things that the priorities that have to do with color, hierarchy, all that type of stuff. And on the other side, accessibility, which is absolutely just as important. You know, I'll let you speak more to that in a bit here, Dana, but I think moving on, it's beauty versus usability. Both are very highly important priorities. And I think what it can turn into is, you know, a war of personalities, right? I'm right. No, I'm right. And I think at the end of the day, that ends up just being a lose-lose scenario for both sides. And that's what we want to talk about today. And maybe just dive into that. The goods and the bads, and let's take a breath here and let's think about that. So who remembers this guy?
So on this slide, Mark has inserted an image of he's a man, looks very angry, his fingers in the air, ready to shout at somebody. And tell us who this is, Mark.
Right. So in the chat, I'm assuming you guys are saying something about Seinfeld, soup Nazi. But hey, let me actually tell you, this is not the soup Nazi. This is the brand Nazi. This is your brand manager. This is the guy who's trying to tell you, no, you cannot change these colors. It is in our brand guide. No, you may not. Okay. So who has actually run up against this type of person, right?
Oh man, we all have.
And I would like to say that I'm not guilty of this, but I probably am guilty of this. Okay. So why is this? You know, why do we get so huffy about the colors? Why does it matter so much? And from the branding side, the priority really comes down to, we want to deliver a unique, memorable, and consistent brand experience. And we do that in various ways, but mainly through color. Color is a huge, huge part of that, okay? So Let me give you just a couple examples. On your screen, I've got four sets of boxes. On the left is brown and yellow. Middle left is purple, orange. Middle right, blue and red. And all the way to the right is yellow and red. So this is a category of service. If I were to ask you, what kind of companies are represented here, would you be able to guess? There's going to be four logos underneath this. So pretending that you guys are all blowing up the chat, guessing these different companies.
Our chat is oddly quiet. Come on, guys.
All right. Well, it is, I don't know where you guys are. It's 8:15 where I'm at, or 8:23 in the morning. So might have something to do with it. So who guessed the shipping industry? Now, check this out. So these are black and white logos of UPS, FedEx, Postal Service, and DHL. And you put all four of these up next to each other, and you can see, you know, their shape, there are letters, and then there's pictograms, right? Now, watch what happens when I switch to the next slide and add color. Hmm. Boom. Immediately, the logos distinguish themselves from each other, right? So color plays a huge, huge factor in differentiation between different companies. And that's when you're talking to branding, there's so many companies out there, you need to be able to set yourself apart using color. Okay, another reason why color is important to us, it's used for scannability and visual hierarchy. So on this screen, you can see a whole bunch of big read me, and then in the bottom right, there's a small red made you look. Okay, now when we actually break this down, the gray letters are 45 point and the red letters are only 16 point. But naturally your eye goes to the red, okay? So red is used as a sense of danger or awareness in terms of your scannability. And that's a physiological response that we have. The next example is color is used to establish aesthetics, vibe, personality, you know, harmony, balance, all that stuff. There's tonal nuance here, right? So in this image, you have some new old style Art Nouveau typography and graphics that look like it could have been made in Paris, and it's just beautifully done. Right, I believe this is Louis Feely, or you know, someone along those lines. But you can see that a lot of care has been done in choosing the right colors and the right tones. Now, if we flatten out the colors, what happens is we've got just black and white image on the left, and we've got color image on the right. So this is Windows icons that we I did a couple years ago, and you can see the one on the right is it's a lot more beautiful. There is a purpose for color, and then of course there's purpose for black and white, and all of that is determined by color and the tone and the detail. And lastly, color is used for psychology and brand perception. You know, up to 90% of an initial impression comes from the color. And you can see on this slide, there's three logos on the left and three logos on the right. On the left, they're vibrant. You've got the green Starbucks, you've got the red and the yellow, the McDonald's and Burger King, which are just enticing, right? You've got the vibrant colors. And on the right, you know, I don't know if I want to say boring, serve a purpose.
They're boring.
Yeah, okay, there we go. You've got the corporate blue, you've got the IRS, you've got United States Postal Service and IBM. Okay, so there's a difference between the color choices here. And it has a big, big impact on the perception, the immediate perception that you have. So now
when we're talking, Mark, just to jump in really quick, Laura said that those boring ones on the right were safe, and Paula said they were trustworthy. And so it, you know, it's not about good and bad. It's about what's the meaning?
What's the purpose? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is the target, the art direction? Absolutely. So let's just talk through some of the pain points from the perspective of the designer. Why do I get all huffy when Denim comes to me and, hey, Mark, you got some issues with these colors here. Well, as a designer, I am trained for years and years and years, and I would even say maybe even born with special acuities around color that I would say, hey, this is my job. I know what I'm doing. Don't tell me what to do. But really, of course, we're talking about when ego gets in the way. We should always be open. We should always be teachable. There should always be opportunity for growth. You know, sometimes it's not us. It might be the CEO or the company owner or, you know, like the brand manager or something like that. Sometimes the color decisions can be a personal affinity to like bright yellow or bright green or something, you know, and it doesn't work when you're creating a accessible color system, but the owner or the CEO is just so stuck on it. Sometimes also there are system limitations when it comes to technology. You know, all the products, WordPress, Shopify, any of those, sometimes they need, you know, development help. And as a designer, I may not be trained in that. I've got my, what I can do and what I can't do. And lastly, you know, I want to create beautiful products, right? And branding is a beautiful process to me. And if I am forced to flatten out all of these beautiful nuances into black and white or something, you know, to me, we run the risk of, you know, flattening the hierarchy and reducing the personality and the charm of the brand itself. And really, brand is about differentiation. And so that there's some high risk things there. So the pain is real. And from the design perspective, it's legitimate. And I know it's absolutely legitimate from accessibility as well. And I know you're going to get into that next here. So I guess when you're going to ask this question, you know, if brands are spending so much time and effort on creating a color scheme, why can't we just use the brand color anywhere we want? So Denim, why don't you take from here and give us some of that insight there?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, it is important to understand where the branding people are coming from, because those are legitimate concerns, and a lot of thought has gone into that. The priority for accessibility professionals, however, is slightly different. We want to make sure that the content is fully accessible for all users equally. And so making sure that everybody can receive what it is that you've put together. Considering how to make it so that everybody can receive that. So if you'll go to the next slide, I want to run through just really quickly the history of the color accessibility standards, right? So in the very beginning of the internet, 1991, the very first websites just looked like pages of text, right? Because that's all they were. There was no styling. The next bullet point says that styling came out in 1996. So 5 years later, CSS1 was introduced. And then for a few years, it was kind of the Wild West until 99, when WCAG 1.0 came out, where the web content accessibility guidelines were put together saying, okay, well, we gotta make sure that this content, everything that you guys, all you web developers are putting out there, that it can actually be consumed by all of the intended audience.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any plan.
And so WCAG 1.0 had a requirement for color. And the requirement for the color was fairly vague, really. So that requirement said that you needed to ensure that foreground and background color combinations provide sufficient contrast when viewed by someone having color deficits or when viewed on a black and white screen. And I kind of, you know, so this is very vague, right? This standard is super vague. They had, back in the day, they had a quick test. So a way that you could check this. And it made me laugh even more because the quick test for this standard was that what you should do is you should print out your website on a black and white printer. Then you should take it to a photocopier and photocopy it a couple times and see if you can still read it. That was the test, right? And so this standard, it was starting to move in the right direction of figuring out how to determine what's dark enough. But I guess the first standard just identified that it needed to be dark enough. If you'll go to the next slide, that standard actually lasted basically until 2008 when WCAG 2.0 came out. And that requirement there was that the visual presentation of text and images of text has a contrast ratio of at least 4.5 to 1. So that's the standard that most of us know, 4.5 to 1 contrast ratio. Was the initial standard there in 2008. And that's lasted. It's still that today. Now, when WCAG 3.0 comes out, whenever it comes out, who knows when, it's rumored that they're going to use the APCA value, which is it's more nuanced. It's a little bit has to do with the context of the... I don't understand it all, unfortunately, not yet. I will when it finally comes out. There was a pretty good... session on this a couple, not this past AXCON, but I think the one before that, if you want to find out about APCA a little bit more. But but ultimately, right now, the standard is 4.5 to 1 for regular sized text. Okay, you can go to the next slide, which declares that the issue is that it's problematic to use some brand colors in situation for accessible content. And then we have some examples to show kind of how this the colors that are used in brand may not be able to be used in the content of the site. So can you, the next, this first slide shows us a very big, beautiful Coca-Cola image in their logo in red. And Mark, would you tell me what you as a brand guy see in this logo?
I see a masterpiece, right? So this has been around since basically 1887 or something like that. It's beautiful, right? It's got personality, it's got charm, it's got a bright, vibrant red color. I mean, surely it's accessible, right, Denim?
Well, let's check it out. So there is on this next slide we have what the actual Coca-Cola red hex value is, which is F40000. Now this against white has a contrast ratio of 4.33 to 1. So most text normal size needs to be 4.5 to 1. So we see that the Coca-Cola red on a white background doesn't meet that contrast ratio, and neither does a white on that color of red background. So for normal size text.
Bummer. Okay, it's beautiful, but not accessible in this scenario. Okay, next example. We got Baskin-Robbins, some of my favorite ice cream back in the day. What do you think about this one, Dennis?
Well, this Baskin-Robbins, kind of the indigo, and the pink, if you'll go to the next slide, I've analyzed what this. So the white text on a pink box, so using the middle 31 in the Baskin-Robbins 31 logo, white text against that pink background would not work. It's 3.19 to 1. The pink text on an indigo background wouldn't work either. That's 2.14 to 1. However, there is an accessible option that you could use with your text, which would be just to use the indigo. So either white on indigo for their buttons, if they wanted to do that, or indigo text for something like links. Gotcha. So they do have an accessible option.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, next we got FedEx, another classic. Let's break this one down.
Okay, sure. So this FedEx, so the left, the Fed of the FedEx is kind of a, this dark blue color, and the X is an orange color. Looking at the contrast ratios, that orange on white only has a contrast of 3.39 to 1. Orange on purple is slightly better, but not much, 3.69 to 1. But the purple on white would work. It's 12.5 to 1. So once again, they could use that dark brand color in their content, just not the orange.
Right on. Okay. All right, let's move on. Burger King. I'm hungry. How about this one?
All right. So Burger King, this is their old logo from several years ago, where it's very vibrant colors. It's this vibrant yellow, and the Burger King itself, the words are this kind of pink color, and then it has this blue swoosh kind of around it. So the red against white has 4.3, 4 to 1. So once again, wouldn't work for text, almost would though. Yellow on white is going to be 1.87 to 1. So that can't really stand on its own even anywhere, not even with large text. Blue on white, however, that blue color, the containing swoosh, I guess, has 7.67 to 1. So if they wanted to use a brand color in their content, that would be the one that they could opt for.
So I think what's crazy, as a designer, this logo pops. It looks amazing. And I know we'll get more into this later, but they did a new logo, which has that vintage vibe. And I love this logo, but it doesn't quite pop as much. Let's break this one down.
True. Well, and it's kind of an interesting choice because they went from this very vibrant, you know, pink and yellow and blue colors to their new logo has a kind of a darker orange and a darker red, but it's all on this tan. And so the result is that the red on tan has a contrast ratio of 4.32 to 1, which is super close to meeting contrast ratios. But the orange on tan is just 2.39. And so both of those are problematic. But what moving to this logo did do is that it made possible an addition of a new color to this brand, which is brown, now on their website they use everywhere. They use a lot of this brown, and the brown has a fine contrast ratio, right? It's like 11 to 1. So, and that's the contrast with that tan color. So they like that tan color, and the new brown has a fine contrast with it.
Yeah. Okay, there we go. So, like we talked about, the logo's popping. What does the rules actually say about the colors or the brand name when pertaining to logos?
Well, I'm glad you asked it. WCAG 2.2 success criterion 1.4.2 says, text is that is part of a logo or brand name has no contest requirement.
Aha, say that again. What was that, Deneb?
So as part of a logo or brand name, it has no contrast requirement. But if you'll go to the next, so you might say, well, okay, then brand colors don't need to be accessible. But if you'll go to the next slide, we're missing a slide there. But true, the brand colors themselves don't need to be accessible. However, the content color does need. So if they're using that brand color in the content, it does need to be accessible. So we've got, what's the different? Well, we've got two different, I guess, dichotomies, the brand versus content. So noticing the difference here, on this slide, we have an image of, two different parts of the Coca-Cola website. One is a part that uses a lot of the branding.
Right.
Which is,
I'm going to bring this to this next slide here. It really kind of brings it in. So on the left side, you've got the copywriting, you've got the call to action, and we want to say the container box or whatever. And then on the right, you've got the beautiful imagery, you've got the product packaging and a color, and it really brings it all together. But they are in, like you said, they are in two different categories. Okay. So we're making the distinction between the two. And one thing to think about is art and copy, right? I don't know if any of you guys have seen this amazing documentary. It's one of my favorites, but they really just bring the point home. So we're either going to be dealing with brand, accessibility, artwork, copywriting, legibility versus expression, that type of thing. Okay. So back to you. Let's get some more info here.
Yeah. Well, and so I think it's interesting as well to mention that when Mark and I started talking this over, just talking about brand colors and stuff, he said, "Well, no, Denabyte, I don't think you're right. I think all the big companies, they use their brand color wherever they want." And I said, "Well, you know, why don't we do some research?" And so we both went and we looked at a bunch of websites, and he came back to me and he said, "No, Deneb, you're right. The big companies, they don't use their brand color in..." He didn't use these terms, but essentially...
You're kind of putting words in my mouth, but I will give you this one for the sake of the presentation. And you'll see later on, we've actually collected 4 or 5 examples that show how, yeah, they've made migrations towards basically just separating all of the artwork and with all of the content and text. And absolutely right.
Sure. So while brand colors don't need to be accessible necessarily, they don't need to meet any contrast ratio standard, the content does, because it is the web content accessibility guidelines. So what is content? Let's talk about that for just a minute. I'd say content is any information that is communicated through the text of the site.
Yeah.
So I've got some examples. For example, paragraphs, headings, links, buttons, anything that is communicating its content through words through the text. So we've got some examples here of just those things. So headings. I've got a on the right side of this slide. I've got a screenshot of one of the websites that we work with, where their headings are their brand orange color. But unfortunately, this brand color has only 2.06:1 contrast ratio, which is, for people who have no contrast sensitivity problems, it's still legible. It's okay. It's they can probably read it. But if you go to the next slide, I've decreased the overall contrast of the site by about 67%, and now it's very difficult to read those headings because they're just so dim. Yeah. And I've got more, anyhow, yeah. So looking at links and text on this next slide, we've got another screenshot of a site that used kind of a pinkish text that only had a contrast of 2.66:1 with the background. And so that's not going to be meet that ratio. And they had some other text there that was even worse. But if you go to the next slide, buttons can also be problematic, right? Because you don't know what the button says if you can't read the content or the words of the button. So if you're in this case, this company was using, there's a image of their button which has a yellow background and white text, and I'm sure they used it, they designed it that way because they thought it popped. Right, everybody's looking for what pops. Unfortunately, this only has a contrast ratio of 1.64:1, which does not pop. If you'll go to the next slide, I've decreased the contrast of this this image, and you can see that, well, the book now text inside of that button is very, very difficult to read.
Yeah.
So we've got some problems. So I know that, and we all know that we're kind of preaching to the choir here, right? You guys are all accessibility savvy and interested. And so you kind of all get this. But the question is, how do I persuade my boss?
Or my brand genius designer, ego-driven colleague.
You said it, not me.
All right. We got three strategies for you guys here, and we're going to break these down each for you. And the first one, present the data. There's lots of data out there. Number one, we're going to start with the colorblindness. All right. So, Deneb, let's talk about colorblindness here. And what do you see first of all, and then we'll get into the actual breakdown.
Okay. Well, so as far as the stats of colorblindness are, it's a big thing, right? 4.25 percent of all people are colorblind, right? That's a lot. Now that breaks down to 1 in 12 men and about 1 in 200 women. So that's approaching 5% of all people are colorblind. So if we look at, so on the right side of this slide, we have an image. It's an image of apples. The top of it is full color. The bottom of it has been kind of decreased to simulate red-green color blindness. And for those who can see the color in the top, and we can all not see the color in the bottom, but it's a pretty distinctive difference. If you can bring something like this to your boss, to your brand guy, whoever's pushing back against this, and say, hey, you know, 4.25% of all people are colorblind. They're seeing this bottom image. You may be seeing this top image. But we need to take into account those people too.
Yeah. Next one, we've got myopia. So basically nearsightedness, right? So the colors blur, blend together. You can see on the top picture, the top right, it's a normal image. On the bottom right, it's got the simulated image where it's blurry, there's nearsightedness. And to be honest with you, I am getting to the age now where I am naturally starting to see this normally. So I don't know if that is a one-up as a designer, or it's a bummer because I need a new set of glasses every year. But yeah, what's the stats on these?
Yeah, well, so myopia affects about 30% of all Americans. But myopia has an inverse relationship with contrast sensitivity. In young adults, at least in this study, meaning that the greater the myopia, the lesser the contrast sensitivity. So the harder it is to distinguish between colors. So you need the contrast to be higher in order to distinguish.
Right. And especially small text and objects. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So our last example here, aging retina. So you can see on the right side, we've got a picture of an old Honda Odyssey, which is one of my old vans here. And the headlight has this yellowed, oxidized lens over it that, you know, just tends to happen with all of these old cars. And, you know, it's the exact same thing with our eye, right? It's like you're driving with headlights through the dark and you've got these oxidized headlamps and it's just harder to perceive everything. What's the stat on this one, Dana?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the same way. Between the ages of 20 and 60 in humans, the amount of light reaching the retina declines about 67% because of the yellowing of the lens. And so that's, you know, greater than 16% of the population is older than 60. And so they have decreased contrast sensitivity just by dint of their having older eyes, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. So all three of these things, adding them up here.
Yeah. So all of that comes to more than half the population, right? 16% aging retina, 30% myopia, 4.25% colorblindness. That adds up to 49 point, or 50.25%. So that's over half of the population has some challenges in this area, and the other slightly less than half don't. So the question we got to ask is, do you want to serve the 4.25%? Do you want to serve the 33%? Do you want to serve the 16% as well? Right? Do you want the business and goodwill of this half of your visitors? Right. And if we can drive that point home, I think the business owners and the brand specialists will be more open to considering another possibility.
Yep, just present the data. There's a lot of it to present here. So number two, peer pressure. Everyone is doing it. You know you want to, right? Okay, so we had mentioned before, we've seen over the past 4 or 5 years, this big migration of the content going from just more accessibility. So here's a couple examples. Screenshots taken, you know, about a year old now, but you can see Apple, right? Almost every creative uses Apple. However, you can see that they got black text, right? And it's on a stark background. The artwork is above it. It's not underneath it. Okay. So that is a great example. Again, back to our Coke example, the brand is on the right and they've separated out the content on the left side here. Microsoft. So what they have, they've got a full spread image, except for they use a content box over the photo that is solid white, gives the headline in black, gives the copy, and then the call to action in dark blue. And then moving on to the redesigned Baskin Robbins, you can see it's got a ton of color. So there's a ton of personality, which is awesome. It's got white over the dark brown for the content box. So it's not just on white. You can flip it around. And then the new pink has got a contrast ratio of 4.72:1. But what makes this work is that they use humongous text. Okay, so again, back to that note about small text versus large text. Mm-hmm. And then again, the lovely rebrand. I love this. I'm totally into this. It reminds me of my childhood. They're using that new brown as the headline. It's big, it's bold. And then what's really interesting is, remember we talked about the red button. If it's just cream on red, it doesn't really fully meet that criteria. But if you look closely, the order pickup is actually white. So they mm-hmm. have little pops of white here and there that it doesn't overpower the brand as a whole. You still get that aged vintage kind of vibey thing, but they are using white strategically here. And it's all good. This is great stuff. So the brands are still great and intact. So the third takeaway I'd like to present to you guys, it's the magic of using tints and shades. And this is called a color step ramp. And in the brand world, you know, this is standard, right? This may not be standard in the accessibility world or the content world. So we just want to bring this to light here. So if we take a step back here, we go 30,000 feet in the air from where we are right now. Digital color and the computers we're looking at is just simply our best try at recreating the world around us, right? So if you think about, take a look around the room, take a look around outside, there's millions and millions of colors. There's nuances just within your one glance, right? And there are certain variables at play that basically determine whether something is beautiful, determine if something has contrast or pop or whatever. And so the difference between digital and analog color is an interesting one. And I think it really comes down to light versus shade. And we'll get into that a little bit more later. But how about this? Who remembers about 4 or 5 years ago, this image that sort of went viral while we were all wearing masks and in the pandemic? So on the screen, if you can't see the screen, it's got a someone in a dress and it's striped, and it either looks like it is white and gold, or there was this whole big debate going of people saying that actually it's blue and black. And why, how come people are can debate about it? How come we see it differently? Why is this? You know, there's a bunch of scientific stuff, and they're having to do with your eyes and cones and all that stuff, but it really comes down to different perception. So what's interesting is when you look at it through different lenses or in different lighting conditions, the exact same color will appear differently. And you can see that in this illustration where on the top, it's got the color matching, but the different parts, it's so interesting. And I don't fully understand it, but I know it is a real thing, right? Okay. Here's the deal. The colors were each perceived differently based on the lighting conditions around it. So lighting on the spectrum, the accuracy that you're going to perceive something depends on the lighting and contrast conditions around it, right? And then also, you think about it from, like we talked about, it comes down to light and dark. So here's another example. We've got basically a single sheet of paper sitting on a desk. It's not a trick question or anything like that. It really is just a single piece of paper. But you see there is light and there is shadow, okay? It's the exact same color piece of paper, but the perception of the color that you see digitally is through the lens of either highlight or shadow. So again, another example, we've got green leaves here. The color's leaf in the sunlight is a brighter green, and the color's leaf in the shadows is a darker green. It's the exact same green. Well, There's nuance here, right? There's different shadings of the pattern or whatever, but yeah, same leaf, different shades. So let's apply that principle to our digital brand colors online. And, you know, we're getting into a little bit of gray area here.
Can I jump in just real quick,
Mark? Oh, please, yeah.
Do all of this, or we're doing all of this, we're introducing all of this as ways to talk to your bosses who are a little hesitant to change anything. So if you can show them, well, it's really, this is this accessible blue or whatever, it really is, it's still your shade of blue. It's just as if you were looking at it on a piece of paper in a shadow.
Right. No, that's great. So the technical name is, you know, is bringing in a tint ramp. And the practical theory on this, the goal basically is we want to build a versatile tonal system of tints and shades, but based on the approved brand color. And it's sort of a workaround, right? Like you had said, there's ways to work around this so we can keep our brand consistency, but it gives us a way to have that conversation. So again, think about your brand color, and then if it's in sunlight, you add 20% white to it. If it's in shade, you're gonna add 20% black to it or something like that. Here's a visual example. So the brand color on the left, and you're gonna do a quick step of every 20%, and this is what it looks like all the way up to 100% of white. And conversely, the brand color adding 20% of black, or, you know, K in the old CMYK color model, you step it down 20% all the way down to the black. So theoretically, these should all be safe according to this theory. And here's an example basically of a tint ramp that I have put together for one of our Seamaster clients. Starts with the brand colors up top, and it tints it up and it gives us this whole palette basically to work from, okay? And this can be applied in, you know, a lot of different ways. This is just a big theory for us to think about here. And so now we're at this place where, okay, maybe we've talked you into it. What about just using the original brand colors? Like, what can we use? What can't we use? where can we use just the original brand color? So as you said, Deneb, anywhere that's not content bearing, feel free to use whatever colors are in your brand, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes to content, keeping it accessible by using tints and shades, right?
Yep.
So the more complicated answer is that, I mean, it's definitely up to you and your brand team, but we've created a list of examples of treatments and things that show you different ways that you can do that. So this will be fairly quick. We'll just give you guys this, and basically it's a whole list here, and I'll run through some visual examples as well here. So in terms of photography and illustration and art, okay, think about using color pops. Think about using photography on top of your brand colors. Think about how Burger King used it, you know, in this illustration behind the photos. And then Apple had this wonderful illustration here. So you can bring color into it, just separate it from the content, right? Number two, the section dividers or the color bars. So Gusto, I love the branding of Gusto. I use Gusto. And you can see on this right-hand side, there's this just big, nice teal blue color bar, right? We got the illustration up top, got the white on top of the blue color bar, bringing in some more of those brand colors. In this example, it is using patterns in the background as different elements. So Seamonster redesigned the Pop Chips website, and you can see the little triangle illustrations on the right side we incorporated around the bags, and then on the left side is the landing page where we use it as a pattern element in the back just to give more personality and vibe, and yet the white still has that high contrast on top of it. And yeah, I would say as a designer, I might have tried something a little less stark, but you know what? I live and learn, and this is a few years ago, so here you go. And lastly, consider using bitmap or duotone images. And again, the caveat is this stuff is all subject to your brand treatments and your brand guidelines. But again, these are conversations that maybe you can bring up to them and say, like, hey, could we consider using imagery that has our brand colors in it rather than, you know, putting inaccessible color schemes on top of the color boxes or whatever. So yeah, some other examples. And here's some more esoteric examples. So, you know, text color or text decorations, this little squiggly underneath it here, or this yellow box underneath the headline, you know, that type of stuff. And just to quickly go through some more, Deneb, you've done a lot of work with focus indicators and basically bring in your brand color into that, if it works or not.
Yeah.
Text color so boxes.
If you can add any place that's not content, so it's not the text of it, if you can add text decorations that include some of those colors, that's totally fine, right? So I say, you know, in the previous slide, unsubstantial text decorations like overlines or squiggles, shadows, text boxing, right? Around the text, but not as the text. And then the focus indicator, I have a caveat there saying it should be coupled with a dark and light inner border or outline so that it does have that contrast. But that's another way to get your brand color there.
Yeah.
And then the next page, you know, we talked about, or you showed us some examples of text color box under titles of on images, right? Typically when you have a title in the text as the text, it's going to be very large. And so it should be able to meet a lower standard. It just has to be 3-to-1. I did a blog post illustrating some of these kind of text decorations that you could use. There's a bit.ly link, or if you have the slides, you can just follow the link, or just look it up on Seamonster Studios blog. It's called Accessible Firebrand. Also like this. It's kind of the impetus for this.
Awesome. Yeah. So in review, so putting that all together, right? Number one, present the data. It doesn't have to be a hard conversation. We can work together, right? There's lots of data out there. Half of the population has visibility issues, and just remind them of that. Number two, you know, as a designer, accessibility, it doesn't have to suck. Like, we can do this where it looks great, it's legible, and it's beautiful. It doesn't have to be so stark and you know, uninspiring. So let's just keep that realization. Number three, keep the content color fully accessible and separate the content from the art, right? Yep. There we go. So Deneb, let's take us home here.
So finally, at this end, so in the beginning we had branding in one kind of sphere, a white one, and accessibility in another sphere. Well, now we are bringing those two spheres together, making kind of a Venn diagram. It says branding and accessibility. Let's get these together and let's set the world on fire, right?
Let's do it together.
It's a win-win for everybody.
Everyone's happy. We're good. Let's be friends. We don't have to be in this silos. We can just work together. It takes
communication. Together.
It takes openness, open-minded. It's better for everyone. Blended priorities. So that is it. Thank you guys.
If you want to email me, Captain Deneb, just Deneb at seamonsterstudios.com. Mark is Mark at seamonsterstudios.com. So you can do that. Also, I'm Deneb Pulsifer. I'm the only Deneb Pulsifer on LinkedIn.
In the world, probably.
Yeah, probably so. Not the only Deneb in the world, but Deneb Pulsifer, probably.
Amazing.
Wonderful. So why don't you guys stop sharing? I'm going to let Paula take over. For everyone, please, if you have any questions for Deneb and Mark, post those in the Q&A. And I might put Paula on the spot. Do you think you can invent a question while people put them in, or should I try and do that?
You're going to have to try and do that.
All right. I will be here too as well. I will say I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on how you approach that large text color contrast ratio can be lower. I've tried really hard to, with our clients, not have them pick anything that I call it AA18, right? It has to be like larger than 18 pixels. Because I get nervous about, well, what do we do on mobile? Or, right, like there are scenarios where things get lower and then I feel like you just have to pay a lot more attention to, it can never be smaller than this. How have you approached that?
Well, it's a good question. I like you, I prefer the 4.5:1 standard, but, you know, I found myself just not wanting to get into it with some clients. And so I do just make sure that any place we use that their brand color is larger. So it's 19 in bold. So I guess that's capitulating a little bit. but I think really what Mark showed us in terms of what color really is in the real world and being able to see that, well, color is, even a darker version of your color is still your brand color. It's just like looking at your color and shade. So I think that's a great way to show, oh, let's just add this to your, well, and maybe this is where Mark's going to have to come in. Is there an elegant way to encourage someone to add an accessible color to their brand palette?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what we're all talking about, right? And I've seen a whole bunch of companies lately. Let's see here. So I'm a musician, right? So musician, designer, one of my favorite places to buy used instruments is this website called reverb.com. So they actually changed their main color, which is an orange. They went from this lighter orange. It's funny, we were talking about this before the presentation started, and I noticed they actually shifted their entire brand color a little darker. And I'm assuming it has to do with accessibility. And, you know, that's a bigger conversation that they probably had between designer, owners, you know, CEOs or whoever needs to have that conversation. But if you need to do that, we need to do that. It's a matter of accepting the fact that accessibility is a priority, and it might look beautiful to half of the population, but it's, if it's not accessible, we're shooting yourself in the foot. So yeah, I've definitely seen that. And it just comes down to having that conversation. And again, doing it in a way that we're humans, we're people. Let's get along and let's have great conversations and work this out. We're not that much different from each other, honestly.
Yeah, that's a great answer. I did see that Caitlin popped in a question. I see greater knowledge of accessibility in the brand guidelines, but it's often not used across assets and particularly creative campaigns. Larger brands often bring in outside agencies and accessibility isn't taken into account. I'm wanting to better integrate accessibility into campaign briefs. How would you approach this?
That is a great question.
Let's see.
I do know that, like you said, yeah, a lot of times there are outside agencies that come in. I've been on both sides of it, to be honest with you. And what is interesting is that sometimes people are given leniency within the brand, and they don't have to go, you know, so cut and dry and follow the guidelines. But I would say it's going to be a conversation up front, because at the end of the day, you are hiring this agency to produce a product or a campaign that will increase your numbers, right? It's all about awareness or profitability, or, you know, if it's a nonprofit, it's not about profit, but it's about the awareness. So you got to build that into your goal. So when you are talking to different agencies, that's one of the goalposts. That's one of the milestones, is saying, we want to increase our profitability by this much. It needs to be accessible. And what that means is that we need to hit these contrast ratios. I would say put that in up front before you're even hiring them. And then maybe the agencies that care about accessibility, they're going to jump up to the top of the list. The people who don't really care about it, they're like, maybe these aren't our guys for this campaign. Priorities. I think it's about priorities. Denevia, any thoughts on that?
And you meant, or it was mentioned in, let's see, who was it? Caitlin mentioned that the accessible colors are in the brand guidelines. So it might just be a matter of calling the agency on it. Say, hey, no, look, our brand guidelines say this, and we hired you and we expect you to know that. I mean, that's kind of confrontational, but.
And maybe there's not a chapter in the brand guidelines around accessibility. That would be the first thing that you could do, is create a standalone chapter for accessibility. And, you know, maybe that requires the tints and shades ramps or examples of how to use it. And yes, set getting the tools ready to set everyone up for success.
Yeah, great answer. We do have another question. Have you ever tried to adjust the contrast on a color by making it a little bit different without telling the client? If so, how did that go? Did they actually notice?
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one, since yes.
I try not to do that, but I try. So what I do when I find a color that just needs to be tweaked just a tiny bit, what I'll do is I'll send the message, the email or whatever. And in that message, I'll say, you know, here's what your old color looks like. And I'll have the text in that color. And if it just needs to be tweaked a tiny bit, the next line I'll be, here's what the new color would look like. It's not much different. And you probably wouldn't even notice it. Is it okay if I make this changed site wide? And most people are open to that.
right? Or even thinking through some of the treatments, like maybe it's a green background that doesn't quite hit the contrast ratio. Well, maybe the background, maybe you guys start using subtle gradient. Maybe it goes from the lighter green down to like a darker green, like a beautiful gradient behind it. And therefore, the darkerness is higher up and comes through and it's got more contrast to it. And it actually gets it over that contrast ratio. Or maybe it's you want to put in the graphic image, the duotone or whatever that sits behind there. So it's using some of these tools rather than just the stark color that doesn't work. But to answer your question, yeah, it's a conversation. It's about A and B, showing them the one that is accessible and saying this one is slightly different. It's got a higher ratio. It falls within your tint ramp. You guys okay with us using this, that type of thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, because that increases awareness too, which is part of what we're hoping for here. I mean, we call the presentation Accessible Firebrand. We want everybody to be firebrands and spread the religion, right? Spread the gospel of accessible colors. And so I think conversations should be had. I don't think we should be trying to find ways to avoid them and do the right thing despite our people. Let's just persuade them that it's the right thing is the right thing. And it's such a minor change in many cases that they should do it and feel good about it.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. We do have another question coming in. Brett asks, how do you approach balancing brand identity with accessibility standards, especially when a brand's colors don't initially meet contrast or visibility guidelines?
Dana, you got this? I got something.
I'll let you can go first.
Okay.
I think it's more you.
Yeah, this is sort of the name of the game. This is where we're at in terms of awareness within our design culture. And 5 years ago, it's like accessibility is a, 5, 10 years ago, I would say, it's more of like a nice to have. It's not a high priority, but now it's becoming a high priority and people are building it from the ground up to meet accessible standards. So how do you balance that? I mean, it's for sure case by case, but it's going to be a matter of how can you separate the content from the artwork? And can you have the artwork, the imagery, the illustrations, the patterns, can you separate those out? And so that the content itself has those darker, higher contrast against a lighter background or vice versa. I think it's just a matter of accepting user interface for what it is rather than trying to think about it from like a, I don't know, a print or whatever perspective.
Yeah. So, you know, Mark gave us this amazing way to view colors in a new way, right? And to inject you know, the tint ramps and the shade ramps and stuff, so that maybe including some accessible colors into the brand by doing that. But if you run into somebody in you know the company owner or the brand guy who is just inflexible, intractable, will not add an accessible color, then you just have to say, well, here's the principle. We got to keep the colors, the brand colors, separate from the content. So we can put that color in different places, right? And that's why we gave that whole list of, you know, images with lots of that color. Like, think of the Coca-Cola website. It had so much of that red color, but none of it was in the content. None of it, right? All of it was part of that image, part of the cans, right? It was. So their color came through, it just was not in the content. And that's why I gave the list of the other you know, things that you could add that are decorative, flourishes, and just keep it out of the text itself. And so when they're intractable, you say that. If they're open to considering adding a new color, then you do what Mark showed you how to do, explain about, you know, seeing colors and shadow and all of that. But otherwise just say, no, we got to keep brand colors out of the content if it's that way.
And that's a great answer. And that goes into, well, you answered what I was going to ask next, which was, what happens when the client is very pushy and they don't want to go astray from their actual colors and they are not accessible? So given that you just separate the branding from the content, that would be a great answer for that. So yes, I appreciate that answer. And I do not see any other questions coming in. I just want to thank you guys for this amazing presentation on Firebrand. If you want to remind everyone where they can find you or how they can find you, and any final thoughts that you may have, you have the floor right now.
Okay, well, we're just... excited to be here. You do have our, you can always email us, find us on LinkedIn, or come to seamonsterstudios.com and find us there.
Yep. But thank you guys so much. And again, hey, let's work together, right? Deneb, you're my friend. Thank you for, teaching me all this stuff. And, this goes to show that we can work this out. We can have conversations. We can have hard conversations. We can do it kindly. We can say our perspective. Again, we got to realize this about human nature. We tend to live in silos and we tend to do this thing. That's not the answer, okay? The answer is to sit down and to have conversations and realize that the other person across the table is a human being just like you. They've got feelings. They've got probably a cat. Maybe you've got a dog or whatever. Let's be genuine. Let's be awesome. And let's work this out so that everyone can have access to our brand and our product.
Yeah. Well, it's worth it. It's important enough that we need to overcome some of our tendency to be, tribal or to stick with what we know, right? This is something that is worth it to come out of our comfort zones a little bit, both ways, right? And I'm talking to all of you accessibility lovers, fellow accessibilists just like me, right? It's a hard conversation to initiate in some ways because the emotions run so high. So we are going to have to come out of our comfort zones a little bit to initiate the conversation and hopefully do it in such a way that we can come together.
Again, thank you so much, Dana. Thank you so much, Mark. This was an amazing presentation full of valuable knowledge. And thank you everyone for attending. We'll see you again on our next meetup on the third Monday of the month at 7 p.m. Central. Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.